outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain.
So as we're recording this, I am living in and around a ticking time bomb.
Wow. In your own house?
In my own house.
You have a ticking time bomb. It's not your wife, is it?
It is my wife.
Oh my gosh. You're calling her a ticking time bomb. Hope she's not listening to the God Journey anymore.
No, she went in and had a doctor's appointment today and she was starting to have some contractions. And I was like, so did you check? Is there any movement that's taking place? And she's like, well, I wasn't ready to know yet, because she has another doctor's appointment at the end of this week. And so, but she is full on nesting, lots of projects, and she is a ticking time bomb.
Oh, wow. Well, gosh, a lot of people have asked me how you've been getting by with your dog passing away. And you've kind of got a dog gone and a baby coming. It's kind of a conflicting set of emotions in the Rice household.
It is. I honestly, if I had the ability to, I would probably incorporate another fur family member. And yet I feel like I may not survive my wife's wrath if I introduced a fur family member right on the eve of us having a new daughter in the home.
Yeah, let's put the survey out to the God Journey audience. You women especially, how would you feel about having a baby at the same time your husband brings a new puppy home? I think I hear the answer already.
Yes, I feel like the response is going to be staggering in one direction.
Oh, wow. A puppy's not quite as much work as a baby, but they're a lot of work.
And dropping them in at the exact same time, I feel like would be creating additional stressors. But it's been tough. I mean, man, there's still lots of memories. And, you know, as when you have somebody that, when you have an animal that's that integrated into your family, I was talking to a breeder that has a puppy that's of the bloodline that I'm really interested in getting. And I sent them a photo of Toby and I, and her response was, you must have had a really strong bond with your husky in order to get that shot. Because it's me fly fishing, and he's literally like standing 2 feet behind me in anticipation, because he loved to eat trout. And so I would catch the trout, and I had to be really careful because he would eat them with the fly still in the fish. I couldn't even get them unhooked before he would eat the trout. So I had to be really careful.
Now, why does he get to eat trout? Do you normally just catch them and then just toss them behind you and let the dog eat them, or what?
Normally I do catch and release, but with Toby, if he was anywhere close, I had to be really careful because I'd let him eat one and then the rest I would throw back. But man, he would eat his full if he could.
He knew what you were doing anyway.
He knew exactly what I was doing.
I'm sorry you're missing your dog. That always creates a hole in the home. That's why Sarah and I would always get a puppy the next day. We lose a dog, we get a puppy, but we weren't birthing kids at the same time. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yep, that's a little caveat.
But such a difference. You come home and there's this big hole in your heart because you're going to open the door and there's somebody missing, right?
Yeah.
And then when you get a puppy, you're coming home and you can't wait to see what the puppy's destroyed. And so you, you know, I've been thinking about the one we lost. You're looking for the one that's so happy to see you when you come home.
With your possessions mangled around you.
Yeah, well, enough puppy
or a wife
baby
pulling her hair out.
Well, enough puppy and baby talk. I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And this is the God Journey. Welcome. We're actually doing a twofer. We just finished the one we did last week, and I don't know what we're going to call it yet, so we can't even tell you what the name of it is. We'll figure that out later. But we also had a letter. I sent this. It's a blog posting by somebody that I read online occasionally. And there's just so much in it that I thought the God Journey audience would really want to interact with. And it kind of follows up what we were talking about last week about following God and the uncertainty of it and being frustrated at times that God isn't clearer than we'd like him to be. And this article was entitled, Let's Face It, We Resent God.
When I saw that title, I was like, okay, where is he going with this? Like, that was the first place that my mind went.
Particularly the guy who's writing it. It's Mark Golley. He's the Golley Report, which I read, and he's changing that now to the peripheral something vision something. Actually was the, I forget this title. He was a big cheese at Christianity Today, retired a year or so ago, started his own kind of the Golley Report. And I find him a challenging thinker politically and spiritually. Talks a lot about the elusive God, which is, you know, finding God and that God's intentionally being elusive, which I know a lot of Christians feel like.
Yeah.
You know, I hear it all the time. You say God loves us and, you know, he wants to be with us in life, but I feel like God's like the parent that divorced my mother and went away. And I get a letter once a year from this dad that tells me how much he loves me and whatever, but he never actually shows up to be part of my life. And I find that so sad. I know a lot of people feel that way. And what I liked about this article is I think he may get to why that's true, why people feel that. And he's expressing his own pain, and I'm sorry for the pain. I really, man, but I think the best way that I can read this column is to think this is where religion ends up. This is where religious thinking ends up. The very first line is, I've been exploring why it is challenging, to say the least, to give ourselves to loving God, let alone with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. I've noted that God is not helpful in this matter. Wow. And he starts out with, I think, the greatest statement of the law, which is, you want to know God, you've got to love him with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. Who on any day, if you take that from a legal perspective, what does it mean to love God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength? Particularly if God's not helping you. If this is something you've got to conjure up out of your own self-effort, and then God will recognize it and go, oh, well, there you are. I can make myself known to you. I just go, oh my gosh, no wonder he's gotten stuck. And I know this is the greatest command. That's how people describe this. And I've said often on this show and other places, the greatest command is not this. That's the greatest command of the old covenant. This is still old covenant language. When you're good enough, God will be with you. But the reality is, Jesus said, look, you're already loved. So here's what I'm going to tell. A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. So that to me is the great command. And it really is as great a difference as law to relationship and revelation. It really is. God's already shown me what he expects. I've got to give it to him so he'll bless me. And the other is, I am lost in my sin, and I need a God who finds me in my pain and walks me into a relationship with him where my heart will become wholehearted in my love for him. Now, that's a different way to look at with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. If it's a religious act, we're done. Yeah. If God can do a work in my heart so that I wholeheartedly love what he loves, and love him, and love what we've talked about lately about living in the Father's pleasure and it becoming my pleasure. That's awesome, but he's already stuck in the weeds, I think, from paragraph one. This is something I have to do for God.
Oh, man. One of the paragraphs that really resonated deeply with me was when he talks about the biggest problem is that we really don't want to love God. We may practice, he puts in quotes, or in parentheses, we may practice.
That's me. I was changing. You're getting a summary of the article here. You're not getting the whole article.
Okay.
I added the may, but go ahead.
Okay. We may practice some form of daily devotion, regularly attend Sunday worship, strive to obey God's commands, and make time to love our neighbors in the form of our families, the poor, and the community at large. And I suspect that many of us know it's a sham. It's that most days and most hours of those days, we really don't want God. That immediately caught me off guard. And man, as we kind of wrestle with that and think about that, especially if we bought into the religious thing of, if I'm following God and if I'm faithful and if I'm checking all these boxes, then I won't have to go through the pain. I won't have struggles. My life will be easy. I'll be able to navigate this stuff without having to struggle or without any of the challenges. And that, man, we really don't want to love God. And it's intriguing because my thought to that was, why don't we? What about our belief of who God is and his love for us would lead us to make a statement like that?
But do you remember feeling that way? You ever remember feeling, because I did. I grew up, you know, in a setting where there's a lot of stuff God expected of us, and you've got to do it. And I think one of the best things in terms of religious thinking is if Sunday morning is a requirement, then you can kind of give God his 90 minutes or, you know, 85 minutes or whatever your congregation is. You give it to him, and then the rest of the week is yours. You can go home, watch football, and you can go play golf, and you can go to work the next week, and you've given God his due. But the idea that, man, I resent, or I really don't want to know this God, I remember feeling that way. God was, I mean, I was always enamored with Jesus. God the Father was one scary, creepy dude, man. He had to torture his only begotten pure son to somehow even the score with me. And it just, I remember this. I remember not wanting to love God, but having to act like I did so I could keep the get out of hell free card punched. Or thought I was.
And I think about that. And honestly, I think about the times when I first like really encountered God's love, and then I felt him nudging me into something and literally like feeling resentment of, God, you just showed me a love that I can't come back from. Like, I just encountered that, and that just completely rocked my life and ruined me in some regards. But now, like, if I choose not to want to love you or not to want to continue in this life, I always have this memory. Like, now I always have this in the back of my mind. And yet in that moment, like, he was inviting me to step out of a degree program, out of my dream of running track, and to go to fly halfway across the world to participate in some program. I had no idea what it was. And I was like, I mean, my thought was like, great. Like, I mean, yes, like I deeply value the love that I experienced in you. And yet now, like, it's really annoying because I don't know if I want to have that experience or not.
And I will link to the whole article so you can all read it in context if you want to. Please understand, Mark Golley here is trying to encourage people into a relationship with God that's transforming. He's not a hostile guy saying everybody resents God or doesn't really want to love God. He's saying there's that conflicted part of our being. Part of us wants to, more of us doesn't. And I think that has a lot to do with the religious environment of performance and obligation. And how do I do enough to keep God happy? And it just seems like it calls him a nuisance at one point. I'll read that in a little bit. But it just feels like God's not there when I need him. And he's always got these expectations that wear me out. And I'd rather be having fun and doing other things. But I'm kind of trying to stay in here just in case God exists and hell exists. And I don't want to go there. So this really is, he's describing, I think, the Stockholm syndrome of a kidnapped victim. This is not one who's endeared to God, like Sarah and I are endeared to each other and love living together and sharing life together. We love that. But it's one of us was taken captive by the other, and we don't really have any choice. So you got to act like you love them so you don't get whacked upside the head or you don't get thrown out of the house and the spouse runs off with all the money or whatever. I really do think when I read this, I'm going, this is what I hate most about religion. Is for one of the most conscientious men about his journey, and I would say Mark Golley is one of those. He's very conscientious about his journey. But even for one of those, he has to wrestle with the fact that I really don't love God. I really don't want to be with him because he's just too tedious. And part of that starts at the very beginning. And I know a lot of people who write me who would relate to this. He said, I've noted that God is not helpful in this matter, which is loving him with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. As Isaiah put it, God hides from us. And he just throws the Isaiah 45:15 in there. And I'm like, okay, that pegs my yuck meter. Mm-hmm. To really believe that the God who sent his son into the world to incarnate him, who endured life in this age and death on the cross, God's doing all of that to open a door of relationship with him, that God's actually hiding from us. And this is what I hate about proof texting, because Isaiah 45:15, does it say that? It says that. Isaiah is saying that. And it's not that that's true. It's in the Bible. No, that's the perception Israel had, that God was hiding from us. Well, God wasn't hiding from them. They were been hiding from him. He said in chapter 1, I stopped going to your festivals and your feasts, and you haven't even noticed. So it's not God hiding. It's God inviting them away from the places they got stuck and got lost. But they're staying in the places they got stuck and got lost, so they can't see God from there. So rather than think we're the ones hiding, we're doing everything we were told to do, must be God's hiding from us. But if you start with that premise that God is hiding from us, then he goes on, Jesus said the path of faith is narrow. God made it so narrow, one could say it is about as easy to love God as it is for a camel to squirm through the eye of a needle. I just go,
I love that. That was brilliant. Brilliant.
In what way? It made my heart hurt.
It does make my heart hurt. And yet it puts, I feel like that's the invitation, though, that so often religious offers, right? That God makes it so narrow that it's so perfectionistic, and it's like the comedian that takes it to the dark extreme, and you're like, that's funny because it's so twistedly true that I resonate with it. And that was, man, when I was growing up, and especially in my high school days, that's how it felt, was that God made his will and his love and the path that it was so narrow that it was easier for a camel to squeeze through the eye of a needle than for than to love God. Like I resonated with that so deeply. I was like, that's brilliant because it's a twist, right?
Well, it is a twist, but it just, to me, to give agency to God, when Jesus says the way is narrow, he's not saying I made it that way to keep people out. He's just saying it's a different way of living. And if you don't give some attention to it, you will miss it. And I don't want you to miss it. To give the agency to God, look, I'm hiding from you. And I made this really difficult. So only the really crazy, stupid, overcommitted, zealous morons find it. That's just not the way God thinks. And the eye of the needle was about the wealthy getting in. It wasn't about God, embracing God's love. So he grabs that from somewhere else. But I've been reading Proverbs lately, and I love the first few chapters of Proverbs when, on the one hand, he includes just folly, or even what we talked about last week, human common sense, right?
Yeah.
Folly, the way we get into trouble, into sin and temptation. He compares that to this wanton woman, this harlot who's out in the world in this brash, seductive, you know, dressing herself up and putting on perfume and getting in a bed and saying, oh, my husband, he'll be gone for days. Come on in, young man. And it's this alluring seduction. That's what the folly of the world is. It's all of that. And wisdom is this virtuous woman that's just standing on the street corner saying, I'm here. I'm not seducing you. I'm not using the tricks of the evil trade, but I am here for you. And that's why Solomon starts out the whole Proverbs thing by, man, look for her like you're looking for gold. Look for her like treasure, because it's not that she's hard to find. It's that evil and folly and those things are right at your door enticing you. And wisdom's just right there inviting you. And there's a difference. Yeah. And do you really want God's stuff to be seductive? And you go, oh, yeah, I need that to find God. That's why God's saying, no, it's here. The wisdom of God is available to everybody. I love you. I want you in. I'm inviting you. But if we keep following just the natural inclinations of our heart and we just do what amuses us and we just go down that road, we're going to miss who he is. And if we're going to just negotiate every circumstance, well, it's the best thing I can think to do. This is what I'm going to do to save me. This is what I'm going to, with all that selfish desire, I don't give a crud what's going on with other people. I'm doing what's best for Wayne Jacobson. Yeah. If that's the way you're going to live in the world, then you're going to end up in the weeds. You're going to end up in the house of the harlot, which he says is the house of death. Now, that's not God making it difficult. It's wisdom is there. She's right in front of your face. She's offering you. You're not seeing it because you're the one hiding in your comfort. You're the one hiding in your best guess of what saves me. And that's what Jesus said. If you save your life, you'll lose it.
Yeah.
But if you lose it for my sake, you're going to find life, real life, the wholehearted life that is what he's invited. It's what even the best of the law is inviting us into. Loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Like yesterday morning, and I know this is a week apart from when I actually shared that I went to service Sunday morning. I didn't go again, but I don't know yet. That Sunday hadn't come yet. I went last Sunday. And one of the songs I sing is, I sing your songs from the moment I get up till I lay my head down at night. And I just leaned over to Lewis and go, that's not true. There's nobody in this room that sings the praises of God from the moment they get up. But it's that kind of religious expectation. Yeah. The real conscientious person sitting there who's actually listening to the words is going to be going, I don't do this. Does everybody else do this? I don't do this. I don't even know how I do this. I got too much going on in my life. I got to go to work. I got to do this. I got to do. And it just creates these ridiculous expectations, which is what love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength creates.
Yeah.
I love saying it is. No, it's the invitation to be wholehearted. And you can't do that. God has to do it in you. But if you think God's making this road narrow and difficult and he's hiding from us, and when he talks about searching for wisdom or his light as silver or gold or precious metal, what he's saying is, hey, whatever you're doing to get gold and money and whatever, do more. And I don't mean in human effort works way, but more attention to where's wisdom in my life and how do I find her and how do I follow her?
That's why I see that phrase of God made it so narrow. One could say it is about as easy to love God as it is for the camel to squirm through the eye of the needle.
That's not funny.
That like, that's so diabolically opposed to the invitation that I feel like that God offers us in love. And yet that's what it's made to seem so often. If you're getting into the religious performance and you're buying into that's the way to achieve salvation, that's what it feels like.
Yes.
That's what it feels like, is that it's that hard. It's that difficult to get there. And yet the invitation that the Lord offers is so much more rich, and it's loving and it's endearing and it's specific. There's that specificity that we talked about.
Yeah.
Man, it's just so different between the invitation that man tries to create that says that this is the way, this is what religion is, or this is what quote unquote faith looks like, in that certainty. Here's the certainty.
Yeah.
And here's how you can achieve it. And yet it feels like a camel trying to squirm through the eye of a needle. Even though it's under the brand of certainty. Right? Like that's, oh, here's the certainty. You're going to go to heaven. You're going to get out of jail free card. And yet.
And we make that so simple. Pray the sinner's prayer, get baptized. So you're going to get, now you got you're saved. But then the whole idea of following God is like, oh crud. I don't want to do that. God's a bummer. Unless you're in need, and then you're in need. You want help. So you go to God for help. And then he says this, we're told one way or another time and again that God is a very present help in times of trouble. But we habitually determine in our hearts and minds what that help will look like. God will defeat our enemy. God will bring us peace in our turmoil. God will give us a clear sense of direction and so forth. God will solve our problems in a way that makes sense to us, in a way that will please us. God, in this view, attends to our wishes and solves our problem. Thus, it is fair to say that our view of God has become primarily sentimental. We appreciate God's name only with the outcomes that help us feel warm and fuzzy. If we grasp that God also works not only through relief, forgiveness, healing, and resurrection, but also through suffering, guilt, disease, and death, the question would never occur to us. It would enlarge our vision of who God is and thus make it possible to love God and true God, not our fairy tale God, with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. So he's still on how much we have to love God. And he has not even once in this article brought up how much we are already loved by God, even when we are lost in our sin.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's first love. If you don't get that love right, that you are loved, it's not how much you love him. You will never love him until you are loved by him. And if you're trying to love him for your own benefit, you're right back in the Stockholm syndrome. You are the kidnapped child trying to make peace with your kidnapper so you can get more food, more comfort, not be hurt, right? Yeah. And get tied up less and allowed to walk around the backyard a little bit. I mean, that's the whole sense of where he's coming from at this. Then he finally says, so the biggest problem is it really don't want to love God. Not like that, we don't.
Yeah.
Why would we ever? That's not even like trying to get through the eye of a needle. That's like just running into a brick wall. I'm not going to love a God like that. Yeah. And so then you got the people who are practicing these devotions and, you know, trying to sing a song to God all day long from the time they get up till they go to bed at night. And yet God doesn't seem any more real because that's not where God makes himself known. So that's not God's hiding. You're actually taking on a religious performance treadmill that's taking you away from him.
Yeah.
Actually blinding you to him. and says, until we come to the point of understanding that we resent God and want nothing to do with him, we're never going to be able to love him with every particle of our being. There's that all or nothing crap again. With apologies to those in the UK. Man, it's all, every particle. I've never loved God with every particle of my being. I don't wake up today going, I've got to love God with every particle of my being. What is that? Who does that? What that has nothing to do with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Has nothing to do with the way God wants to invite us into his reality. It's not on us. It's on him and our responding to him. And oh my gosh, this article made my heart hurt in so many ways.
Yeah, I felt like it was this, it just highlighted so many areas that it highlighted so many justifications and conversations that people have about God. And then often they follow it up with, and God doesn't love me, or God's not talking to me, or I don't feel like God's a part of my life, right? Like these just sound like these heart cries and these aches, this painful statements that are coming out of this, like they're familiar.
Oh, I have too. That's why I wanted to read it.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, I like this part. He says we are divided souls. So there's a part of us that has this deep, genuine longing to know God. Or to love God. It's not to be loved by God. His whole orientation is we've got to love God. But he says we have that genuine. And on the other side, we have this part of us that doesn't want to, that wants to just enjoy our life and enjoy what, you know, have fun and not try to add all this God expectations to the life that we have. And that's why a lot of people, I think, have walked away from religion recently. Yeah. If God requires all that, even if he does, I don't want to give it to him anymore. I just want to go out and do my own thing. And there's a lot of people who are leaving their religion with that. So he concludes that by saying, so God is both a nuisance and a disappointment. Oh, gosh. And I want nothing to do with him. He's a nuisance because he's so damn demanding, his words, not mine, day in and day out, requiring us to daily examine our external actions and our internal motives. And raising the bar impossibly high. And yes, I remember this when I was in my late teens, early 20s, even into early 30s. I do remember that frustration. I would never give voice to it because you don't want to tick off the big guy.
Correct.
So I think he's right in that we have to realize some of that stuff is there if we're ever going to get healed.
Yeah.
We got to realize God does seem like a nuisance to me. Yeah. God does seem like a killjoy. God does have these demanding, not only what I do, but then my motive for doing it. Like I'm being good. I'm not committing adultery. But if I even thought about it, then it's just like I've done it. And yeah, people just get worn out. If this is the God you serve, it's exhausting. But none of those scriptures were meaning this way of living.
Yeah,
it wasn't. Then it goes on. Who of us doesn't time and again face temptation? To luxuriate in food or alcohol. Okay. Now eating dinner is suspect, right? Because I'm not loving God with all my being. So I don't do the alcohol thing. I know some of you do. To linger too long on sexually arousing images. To buy more than we need. To lash out in anger at a loved one. To refuse to do the right thing in a given moment. And to say to ourselves, to hell with it. And even though we recognize that what we are contemplating is wrong, we plunge ahead. So along with a genuine desire to know the true God, the beautiful living God, there's also a deep desire to be free from God. Oh my gosh. I know marriages like that. You know, they're married, so they're hanging in there, but they would love to be free of their spouse because of abuse or just the onerous challenge of being in a marriage, that particularly a loveless marriage, where it's not fun between you. It's just we're surviving together. But man, when you have that with God, the desire to be free from God, if that honestly expresses thoughts you've had, people who are listening to us, I want you to know, I get that. I've had those same feelings. But I would also say to you, you're on the wrong road. You're not on the narrow road. You're on the broad road of performance and religious obligation. And you can get on a narrower religious road and be even more dead than you are on a broad religious road.
Yeah.
Because you're missing out the fact that you are loved. And to be free from God would be the worst possibility of the universe we live in. Because God wanted us to set us free. Now, even free from these religious expectations, that was the point of it all. And he's missed it. In fact, he's writing a book now about why, or just wrote a book about why he's gone to Catholicism. He's been an evangelical Christian all his life at Christianity Today, and now he's decided, I haven't read, I don't know why he's chosen Catholicism as his approach to try and deal with the stuff he's writing about here. But man, that makes my heart hurt.
If that prayer is, I deeply desire to be free from God, if this is the God that you know, isn't that the most loving prayer that you could have been led into?
Was what?
Well, that I would desire to be free from God. That if this is the God that you know, that heaps you down, like that invites you into life and then heaps you down with the chains of obligation and rules and law and guilt, isn't that one of the most loving and caring heart prayers that God could actually lead you into expressing? Is I need to be free from this God.
Yes.
I don't know.
As long as we're also clear, he's not that God.
Correct. Absolutely.
We've created this false God in our religious imaginations. Yeah. It's not like the God who wants to set us free to live in the fullness of his wonder and to enjoy the creation he made for us. So it's not all work and obligation. You can't enjoy a dinner and you can't enjoy fun with your friends and you can't enjoy. I just think, boy, when you set it up that you're getting to this ascetic lifestyle. Oh, I've got God's in the no fun zone. And who wants to get involved with all that?
I remember being terrified when I allowed my heart to be honest enough to say that I wanted, and I'm using God in terms of lowercase g, that was the God of that manufacturing was what I needed to be free from. I was terrified because it's like, well, but that bears Jesus's name. That bears the name of the Father. And so am I daring to step away from this? And yet the genuine and passionate and loving Father that I have come to know was the one that was authoring that invitation. But it was terrifying. Because all my life, that's what I've been raised to know as God, as Father, as love.
Yeah, it's like the school bully when you're in high school. The school bully wants to be your friend or he's going to beat the crap out of you.
Yeah.
Or the captain of the football team wants to befriend you and, you know, whatever. And God's not the bully in the room. God's the person you would want to know. God's the person that... He's got all the goodies. He knows he's got the connections. He's got the stuff. He's got the knowledge. This is a God. And more than all, he's got all the goods is that he deeply loves and cares about you. He deeply does. Now people, well, I don't see it. I don't feel his love. And I don't know what that means because I know that's an emotional thing or sometimes that's certain expectations circumstantially didn't work out the way I thought. So I don't feel loved. I don't know that it's primarily a feeling. You talked about that moment you had where you really had this moment with love where you ruined, what'd you say? Love I can't go back, come back from. I love that expression. And people are waiting for that. And I, Jesus didn't encourage us to wait for that. He just seek me, come at me. God knows the way to win you into these realities. So they're not just you and I talking about it and saying it could happen for you. He wants it to happen for you. If it's not happening for you, consider you may be on a religious road and somehow guilt and obligation and shame are all messed up in there so that you're in a fog and Jesus can break through that fog. You can ask him to. He will. It may take some time, but if you're honestly wishing you could be free from God, realize who that God is and who he isn't.
Yeah.
Realize the God you want to be free of is not, he's the best God and the only true God, but also the best loving, kind, gracious, wise person you'd ever want to know. He's a treasure. That's the wisdom seeking the treasure. So he writes this at the end. The problem is that my heart, soul, mind, and strength are deeply divided. As much as I want to love God, I also don't want to love him. This means that many days the most honest prayer is not, God, give me the strength to resist temptation, but God, I don't really want to resist temptation. Help me want to resist it. Not, help me do your will this day, but God, I don't really want to do your will today. Help me out to do that. not show me yourself, for I long for you, but God, help me want to long for you. I remember praying these kinds of prayers. I was taught to pray this stuff. Were you?
Yeah.
I was too, and did it ever work?
No. No, not at all.
So he's recommending as his fix. So tell God, I don't want to resist this temptation, so help me not want to. And then you look at yourself an hour later and go, do I want to resist? No, I don't. So God didn't answer my prayer, so I'm going to go do it. And then it's like, no, God's at fault because I asked him to take it away.
Yeah.
It's the weird stuff we pray that I think is a part of our resenting God. If that's the face that we resent God by Mark Golley. I think part of that resentment is I expect God to answer certain prayers. If that's the prayer you're going to answer. So I feel tempted. And so I'm praying, God, take the temptation away. It's kind of like praying, God, I feel anxious. Take my anxiety away. And how many times have we done that? It doesn't work.
Oh, yeah.
Because God's wanting to get to the root of the anxiety. Why is it that you're tempted? That's the better prayer to me is, God, why does this tempt me?
Yeah.
What's broken in me? What do I not know about me or I don't know about you that if I knew it, this wouldn't even be a temptation? And then let God transform you from within over months and years. So it's not, oh, I'm going to stop that temptation today because that's what God needs to do. No, I'm going to fall to temptation today, right? I'm going to end up having thoughts I'd rather not have and saying things I wish I hadn't said to people I love. I'm going to still fall into those traps today. But the answer is not, oh, God, help me stop being tempted. It's, God, what is it about you I don't know? And what is it I'm protecting in me that doesn't need to be protected? And there's a whole different way. I think what I loved about this article is it's the best religion has to offer, and it still stinks. It's just like roadkill off the road, and this is what we're going to have for dinner. Yeah. It's not the banquet feast of a God who loves us, who's not just wanting to take our temptations away. He's actually wanting to change in us what that temptation latches onto and drags us into sin. He's wanting to fix it at a different level, in a different space, in a different time thing. And that's why the thing we said last week about it'd be easy to let God transform people and then Pharisees looking over my shoulder.
Yeah.
Because it would really be freeing if you just say, you know what, I can't fix this right now. I'm falling to this. And as I'm falling to it, I'm saying, God, what is it about your love I don't know that if I knew it? And I'm not having this performance mindset. I've got to love God with every particle of my being to get him to work for me, and every sin, every temptation, every luxuriating with alcohol proves I don't love him, don't want him, creates an impossible escape room. That's the best way to say it, right?
Yeah.
How are you ever going to get out of this? You're not. And you can join the Catholic Church. You can jump through all the hoops, go get a, you know, you do all that stuff. The inner hunger to know a God is because you're looking for a different God than the one you're trying to serve.
Yeah. I love that prayer of like in that prayer of God, I don't really want to resist temptation. Help me want to resist. It's in that moment where you say, like, where you pray that you're like, oh, I don't even want to resist temptation, you know? And yet in that, in those moments, encountering God's love there, encountering his unconditional passion for who we are there. And in the mess, in the moments where we say, okay, fine, I'm just going to punt this and I'm going to go do what I want. And I'm not even wanting to resist. I'm not even wanting to pray the prayer to resist temptation or learn not to resist temptation.
Or I've prayed them so often and they've never been answered. So I've given up.
Yeah, exactly. And in that, in those moments of whatever you want, whatever language you want to put around it, in encountering the unconditional love of the Father that has been pursuing you the entire time, that's been loving you in the midst of that the entire time, and doesn't come at you with a list, but comes at you with an invitation.
Yeah, and that's, to me, that's the essence of the gospel. I'm coming to you. My longing for relationship with you is that I'm coming to find you in a different way.
Yeah.
And why 2,000 years ago, we put all this beautiful gospel into the same religious obligations that Jesus came to set us free from. We just Christianized them into sacred space, holy days, holy meetings, holy activities, working for God, trying to resist temptation on our own strength, failing at it, blaming God now because I asked him to take it away and he didn't, so now I get to blame him. And I just, I hurt for people who think like this. I would love to spend some time with Mark and say, let's rethink this a little bit. If you're open at all to something other, a different way, because I used to live like this. There's not a thing in this column that doesn't rekindle thoughts, moments, prayers, feelings from my past.
Oh my gosh.
Every bit of it does.
Yeah.
And yet every bit of it today seems a million miles away from where I live. I look at it now going, man, I have not had this thought in I don't know how long. I've not once had the thought in the last 15, 20 years that God's hiding from me. I don't. Yeah. I'm much more comfortable with the fact that my eyes are distracted from him, not that he's not coming to me. He's always coming to me in the best of all possible ways to come to me. And if I'm not seeing it, it's because God's letting me struggle out of that chrysalis I think we talked about last week.
Yeah.
I'm letting you struggle not to perform to know, but struggle to see, because that's strengthening something that's going to allow you to walk with me. If I just dumped it all on you free of charge right at the beginning and it was everything you dreamed it would be, nothing inside would have changed.
Yeah.
And he's all about the changing from the inside so that this becomes a way we can live out of a transformed creation, not something that he just snapped his fingers and I was different and then I'm just his automaton robot. This is really an invitation into a real relationship, real transformation with process. So it's not today every particle of my being loves you. It's today I'm learning a little more how to live in this side of your life and knowing. That's a letter I read a couple of weeks ago from the gal, just learning God's coming to delight in me. That's where things change.
Yeah.
Not I've got to conform my ways to him, which isn't very delightful. And at the end of the day, I get exhausted and then I don't want to do it. And in fact, that's what she said to me. I don't even want to be with God. Well, she was expressing some of this when we started. Now it's all flipped. And now I want to be with him because he wants to be with me. And he wants to be with me in ways that causes my heart to delight, not just ways with me that create more work for me to do to make God happy. That's just nuts. But that's religion. Man, that's religion in a nutshell. I saw some of that Sunday morning a week ago. I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, I used to live here. And that's why I was talking, look, is there a better way to do this? Is there a way to do this that would really, for those that are going to come spend an hour, 15 with you on Sunday morning, go away encouraged in their journey instead of discouraged by their lack of performance? And I don't know. We may be on a road to sort out some of that together. It'd be fun.
I think one of the reasons why there is some of that resistance and there's that struggle and there's that process of the strengthening of the faith is I wouldn't trust it, right? Like if he just gave it to me, my first thought would be, well, this is wonderful, but is it actually going to stand up when the rubber meets the road? Like when this actually gets put to a test, is it actually going to stand up or not? That would have been my first response.
Would it? So I wouldn't even thought of that. I just go, man, he dumped it on me and I'm all good. I'm perfect. That's great.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine those critters wouldn't be obnoxious in the world.
They would be. They'd be incredibly.
Yeah, I don't have any temptations anymore. So you people are still being tempted. You're a piece of crud because something deeper has got to change.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.